Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Now you're very welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. Enda here with you as always this Friday afternoon when we are recording. Alan is here as always as well, as is Juco James. Lads, how are you getting on?
Doing well, thanks.
Yeah, just all right. The tail end of nasty flu is finally going, I think.
Yeah. Good to see you guys. And Enda, nice to see that your November mustache has transitioned to I'm a lazy ass December.
So. Yeah, I thought I'd just keep it to winter months are over, you know, just to see through the coldness and the shite weather we're currently having in Ireland. And whenever I get around to actually stop being lazy, might not happen anytime soon. But we're not here to talk about my facial hair. We're here to talk about what is two Celtic games over the last week, one against St. Johnson and one against Hibs midweek. We might just talk about the Hibs one first, because that's fresher at mind. Like, this was a game where Celtic, having come off a pretty dire performance at the weekend, James, and, you know, from the get-go, they seemed sharper. There seemed to be a bit of fire under the players' arses. There was a lot of changes made, and we'll talk about those as well. But the shape of the team was generally the same. I think it was the key differences in midfield and up front that really made the difference for Celtic. So, I mean, is this something that we'll see from Celtic going forward? Is this a call out from Brendan Rodgers, or what do you see the changes being in relation to?
I think the key element is that we didn't have a black hole in any of the positions. And that's been one of the elements that we've kind of been suffering from, is that whether in, you know, that one position in midfield or particularly on the right side of the wing, we've almost gotten no kind of productive creativity or attacking output for large stretches of games. And I think, you know, with McGregor pushing forward and, you know, I don't think Johnston had a great game, but he wasn't a train wreck like we've been seeing at times. So I think those combined, and then, you know, two of our favorite topics, one is game state. So the fact that we got an early goal may very well have shifted. I try to be generous when I look at these things, to my own demise at times. But given the success that they had at home, playing a more kind of defensive setup and getting a draw out of that game, the idea that Montgomery would come and shift his tactics to be a lot more open and, you know, less closing down of space at Celtic Park, I think is, you know, naive, be the most generous way to put it. So I'll throw him the, be generous and say that the early goal shifted maybe what his game plan was, because otherwise I can't figure out what the hell he was doing. Because I mean, the amount of space that we had, Alan, I don't know if you've captured the data yet, but I mean, they were about, you know, there's a metric on average defensive distance in StatsBomb, and if you think about it from like 0 to 100 being each touch line, their average at the game at home was 31, so, you know, fairly well far back. And this game it was 39. So they were, and I look at this metric regularly. So that's a material difference. To put this in context, the St. Mirren game plan that we talked about all much of last season, as far as what they had done to beat Anja's Celtic, which was, you know, an aberration at the time, their defensive distance average for the game was 28. So as far as like low block, defend your 18-yard box, that gives you kind of some sense of scale. And Celtic's defensive distance was 54, right? So again, that gives you an idea that we were pressing and defending in the opposition half a lot. So, you know, I just can't come up with what he would have been doing in trying to press that much, or because you saw just gaps, huge gaps in the midfield where we were able to capitalize and break lines and take out defenders and that kind of thing. So, you know, we played well. Again, it's always the double-edged sword thing, right? The opponent can assist us in helping us play well and make it easier for us. And I think Hibs definitely did that, particularly after the goal. But I think it also was that we didn't have any black holes as far as in those attacking and even midfield positions. Everyone kind of played at least decent. And, you know, overall, I mean, it was, as someone just watching the game, it was far more entertaining as a result.
Yeah. We saw the introduction of Tomoki from the get-go, Alan. We knew he was coming in as well as Mikey Johnson coming in the wing. We might talk about Mikey Johnson in a little while, but we'll start with the midfield because that does many things to the team. The main thing that it does is it gives a lot of athleticism in the sort of number six position, but it also pushes Callum McGregor forward. Now, I know that you're not the biggest fan of Callum McGregor further forward, but interested to hear your thoughts on how this impacted the way that Celtic were able to play.
Yeah, well, and just to clarify on that, so, I mean, I like McGregor deeper because he basically controls the whole sort of tempo, if you like, of the team. And no one does that job as well as he does. That is his sort of super strength. So you lose that. Yeah, but also, I just think, again, all three of his metrics, especially his creative metrics, are regressing year on year. You know, I just don't think he's got the athleticism, the pace, or even maybe the vision that he had when he was younger, when he was a winger, I guess, mainly, to be playing that more advanced position. Now, caveat. The caveat is, you know, that I think we're being forced to make, you know, compromises all over the pitch in terms of who plays, right? You know, without getting into another recruitment debate. And this is yet another one. But I do think we've possibly stumbled upon the best midfield three solution in the short term. Playing McGregor as an eight is not a long-term solution, right? I'm very settled on that. But as a short-term solution until Hatate's fit or what have you, then I think it's actually probably the most serviceable option. What I like with McGregor, because he's obviously a very intelligent player, is that it was effectively a double pivot, really, with Iwata. McGregor wasn't overcommitting going forward. O'Reilly was very much playing as a 10, really, and almost as a second striker. In fact, if you look at Celtic's average position with the ball, it was a 2-4-4. So they pretty much matched up Hibs all across the pitch and were able to sort of dominate through having better players. And especially in the fullback positions, as James has said, there was so much space that Johnson and Taylor had a field day. You know, Johnson's passing stats were just back to his best, really. He looked back to his best on the ball because he was given so much space to pass into, and he did it very well. But come back to Iwata. He's pretty safe on the ball. I didn't see a lot of expansive passing, not a lot of line breaking. He did pop up in the box and scored three goals, which was a surprise. That was nice to see, from sort of set plays and things. Listen, he's 26. He was J League Player of the Year. This guy is an experienced player, right? He's and it's probably surprising that he hasn't had more of a run in the team until this point. I think Rogers referenced that, said he was injured. I'm not sure he's been that injured that he's missed so many games. But anyway, good to see him in the team. I think it was a good, solid performance. I think probably McGregor and O'Reilly are the best options we've got at eight in the moment, sadly. Yeah, as I say, long story short, I think it's the best option we have for a midfield three. I think Home has just not shown he can get on the ball. It's really weird. He just can't seem to get on the ball when he plays. He's been given some chances. He looks technically like a very good player. He's just, you know, I think maybe like Rodgers would call it personality, but he just doesn't seem to be able to, you know, impose himself on games and get involved in the games. And Bernardo is just one of the weirdest players I've ever seen in terms of, you know, I thought we were getting a creative goal-scoring midfielder, and instead we've got somebody who's absolutely brilliant off the ball, and then when he gets it, he passes it square or backwards. It's just really bizarre. So, yeah, I was happy with Siawata, and I think it will keep us. I would keep that midfield now until, as I say, Hatate gives us some more options.
Yeah, you'd almost forget that Hatate is still actually available for Celtic when he eventually comes back from injury. It's been that long since he's been playing, but boy, have they missed him in the midfield. But I mean, these changes came off the back of a poor performance last weekend against St. John's, James. And after the game, Rodgers had some really, really strong comments on the state of the team and the state of the current squad, saying that there's no dressing it up. He said that the club has lost real quality players over the summer, and that they haven't replaced them, and that they need to bring in more quality. So, I mean, I think he's sort of on the line of where the supporters are at the minute, that the summer signings haven't stuck, and that the players that are currently, that were at the club last year, are currently the players that are still pushing the current squad on. The main change that you've seen from this is Mikey Johnson coming in on the right wing for Yang. I think that was the most obvious one when Yang was taken off at halftime at the weekend, and then suddenly is out of the squad and Mikey Johnson comes in. Now, Brendan Rodgers did have some things to say about Mikey Johnson as well, saying that he has a lot of work to do in terms of his positional play, in terms of his work rate and other aspects of the game, sort of similar to what other managers have said, that he has a lot of quality, but he needs to work on a lot of things like that. So, I mean, Mikey Johnson is not going to change things, but I suppose needs must at this point in time. If Mikey Johnson's a better option than Yang, then why not bring him in?
Well, this goes back to what I was saying about Black Hole. I mean, that first half against St. Johnston was an abomination. I mean, I sitting there watching it, I mean, it was just one of the worst halves that I can remember, just kind of three-dimensionally. And again, obviously Rodgers and the staff not only will have the experience to be able to feel and sense levels of commitment and effort, that kind of thing, and they probably also have tracking data as far as, you know, measuring how active players are. But in my mind, it was just focus. I mean, because it just looked like a bunch of stupid playing as well. I mean, just making silly, stupid decisions and mistakes, and it was just horrific. Johnston, I think, freshened it up, but mostly, I think it was, again, just not being absolutely horrible. he was okay. He was fine. But I mean, that's how bad that first half was. And that's how bad Yang was in that first half. And then, not to pick him out, 'cause again, the whole team was just awful. Yang was, I think, a special brand of awful. I think to go back to Iwata for a second, and this goes back to this benchmarking exercise I do, is, and when I did it on his time in Japan, I think I wrote something like, it looks like his superpower is being safe on the ball, meaning that his passing statistics, I think he only had, you know, this is based off Y-Scout data, but he only had one pass that wasn't accurate in the game. And obviously, you know, high volume of passing. That's not unusual for him. Like, if you go back through his time in Japan, now that his time was also split relatively balanced between center back and defensive midfield in Japan, but he's not going to be that creative deep lying playmaker. That's not part of his toolkit. And so back to what Alan says about compromising, that creates some potential issues and buildup, as we've talked about. And then, you know, as teams do camp in. So, right. So this will be the interesting question, because I think, you know, Sunday is going to be a noticeable shift in tests, not only because of the pitch, but we're unlikely to get a game plan out of Derek McInnes that's going to be as adventurous in defending as Hibbs was. And then you're left with, okay, Iwata, and maybe, as Alan's saying, maybe you have a double pivot more so when we're in that final encampment and of the final third for Kilmarnock. None of those issues were really present in the St. Johnstone game in the second half, and particularly against Hibbs. St. Johnstone was more so because we were just playing so much better, and it, you know, we almost came out like a whirling dervish in that last half hour. I mean, it wasn't the first 5-10 minutes of the second half wasn't all that great either. I think Johnstone will help, Iwata can help, but there are still, you know, complicating factors with whomever we put in because of the state of the squad at this point.
Well, let's stick with Iwata for just 1 second, and Alan, if we take the positives of his mobility to get across, there was a couple of moments where he did shut down the space very well against Hibbs off the ball. We take his safeness on the ball, and we take the ability to shift Cal McGregor into a more progressive position as positives. Why haven't we seen more of Iwata? Like, what is it that has kept Iwata out of the team? Bearing in mind that, you know, Brennan has alluded to issues in training with the likes of Lagerbielke, Navroski. We'll touch on that later on. So he's obviously seeing the day-in, day-out training session. So aside from what we may not be seeing in training, why has Iwata failed to make a dent on the midfield so far for Celtic? In what? It's like, is it 16 months he's been at the club?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I mean, last season it was just a case of you had McGregor, O'Reilly, Moy, Hatate, and they, you know, when they were all fit, that was, you were going to choose, you know, three out of those four. This season, you know, we've got a couple of kids who look quite raw in Holm and Bernardo. I don't know why he hasn't, you know, because we've clearly kind of struggled a little bit in that area. So I don't know the answer to that, but, you know, there has been some quite odd decisions. I mean, for example, you know, Bernabe got like 12 minutes at home to Aberdeen. Where did that come from? He hasn't been on the bench since. Why did he suddenly do that? You know, that was just really weird. Iwata, he played 2 games, then we didn't see him again for about 4 games, and then he played in 3 games, then we didn't see him again for another 3 games, and then suddenly he's playing 90 minutes. So that's really been quite weird. Tilio got 10 minutes against Motherwell and wasn't even on the bench for the next 2 games. And then suddenly he gets another cameo, you know, the other night. So I'm some of these things are like, you know, just all over the place. And I don't know whether that's Rodgers reacting to training and who's training well, maybe, or people have just had knocks that we don't know about. Cause I do try and track player injuries, and I'm not aware of any injuries for all the players I've just mentioned. It's the reason for them being in the squad one time and not. So a long way of saying, roundabout way of saying, I don't know, Ender, to be honest with you, but I'm kind of glad he's there now. Because as I say, I do think it looks to me the most cohesive potential that we have in that position. I do take James's point that, you know, Hibbs almost was the perfect scenario in that, you know, an early goal opens the game up against a team that's very, very 4-4-2 with very attacking forwards. And although they tried to be a little bit narrow in midfield, they generally, there was a lot of space there. So it was a nice game for Celtic. And, you know, I don't want to downplay it. We played well, you know, we deservedly could have won. You know, we got some sites had us more than sort of 4xG. So we could have scored a hat for, really. But Kilmarnock will be completely different. It will be a very congested centre of the pitch. It will be a very deep defence. It will be a very tricky surface. So let's see. But, you know, in the round, I would persist with it personally.
And I suppose sticking with that, like looking at the way the Celtic played in the first half in particular, James, with O up front, I sort of felt sorry for Kyogo then when he came on, because Celtic stopped playing in the manner that would have totally suited him down to the ground. They started actually playing Kyogo ball, playing balls through straight through the defense really quickly, and playing balls low into the box. And O capitalized. I think we're seeing like the quality that is there with O if you service him. But it was like the perfect fodder for Kyogo to score like four goals in that game until he came on, and then the game plan just seemed to go out the window. Against Kilmarnock, do you go with O again, who's off the back of two goals, who has strength, he has a little bit more aerial dominance, he can hold the ball up a little bit more where Kyogo can't, or do you go with Kyogo, who is the tried and tested goal scorer in the Celtic squad?
That is a great question. What a professional host you are. Because I think that might be the most, you know, outside of whether Carter Vickers' fitness is and kind of rules him out, which wouldn't be a surprise given the pitch and that gloriously balmy weather that they've been getting in the Isles, is I could see a scenario where he plays both, where he goes with O because of it being, you know, traditionally a game that's more lenient towards a physicality presence, given the bouncing ball in Kilmarnock and the high balls that tend to be more prevalent. I get back to Alan's comment, because I think it segues, it fits with this part of the conversation, is some of the chopping and changing personnel-wise, I think, has been kind of a search, it looks like to me anyway, a search for solutions, given these imperfect parts that he's been left with, both because of recruitment but also because of injuries. What I've been surprised by is almost he's been relatively bereft in searching relative to shape, changing shape. You know, there's been little tweaks, but generally speaking, we haven't seen anything significant in that regard. So I think it'll be interesting. Would this be the kind of game, like, it, in my mind, it would suit that kind of more significant shift in shape, meaning play with two strikers or, you know, something like a 3-4-2-1 or a 3-4-1-2, something like that. And I still think our personnel lines up with that fairly well. Not perfect, obviously, at the wing back position in particular, but so it'll be fascinating, I think, to see whether or not, because it's been this kind of uniform 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 hybrid, and we haven't seen much in the way of shifting from that, because even within when they both played, it's been more Kyogo dropping into that 10 role, almost like what O'Reilly was playing a lot of against Hibs, as far as that kind of second striker dropping deep. I think it'll be interesting. I would probably do something more in the lines of playing both, because again, we're not screaming for excesses at the wing position. So if you kind of take, you know, Johnston, Taylor, playing both of those type of players relative to what they've been performing at, and leaving somebody like Kyogo or O on the bench, given the nature of this likely, you know, opponent and style of play, I don't know. It wouldn't annoy me to see something more, a little more, not radical in the sense that absolute radical, but radical in the sense that we haven't really seen, you know, a shift in shape.
Yeah. Well, call me crazy, and many will, for this, Alan. And I have not thought this through more than the last 30 seconds when James was talking. But would a situation where, do you know how Liverpool are playing at the minute with Trent Alexander-Arnold, where he's playing right back, but he's essentially playing center mid? So he's playing as an inverted right back, but that's not the whole team playing. It's just him. And essentially what they do is whoever is the other midfielder at the time or the left back will cut in, and they'll play three center backs with Trent in the midfield as opposed to right back. Would something like that work with Callum McGregor as a solution to the Greg Taylor issue at left back, where you start Callum McGregor as a left back in the system with Alistair Johnson cutting in as a centre back, which he does naturally at times as well. But Callum McGregor essentially fulfills the need for control in the midfield and a better solution at left back, which would then allow you to get Iwata into the midfield with a Turnbull and O'Reilly, or a Hatate and O'Reilly and Iwata, and suddenly you have more legs in the midfield. You've got safer passing in the midfield, and then you've also got a solution to your left back problem as well in the short term before you actually bring in a left back.
So it's an interesting idea, and it has been done before on at least two occasions, I'm sure about, maybe more, that McGregor has played that role. And where it worked really well was in games at home against relatively weak opposition, where obviously he's not being asked to do much defending. And the results were actually incredible. There was one game, I think it was against Ross County, where nominally McGregor played as the left back, and he actually completed something like 142 passes from that position. He completely controlled the game from that position. You still had three other midfielders in front of him, plus winger and striker, but he was essentially an extra ball midfield that sat a little bit deeper. And I think another game, and it might have been against Ross County as well, or certainly somebody of that kind of standard. And similar, I think he completed like 120 or 130. It was just an almost incredible performance. He just utterly dominated the ball. So it's not a ridiculous suggestion by any means.
I'm delighted to hear that.
I don't know to what extent it would work away at Kilmarnock, to be honest. But I mean, maybe it's not too risky, in the sense that, just quickly looking at their stats, I mean, they've probably got the least effective attack in the league, actually. I think their XG is either equal lowest or lowest in the whole league. So they're
especially,
really that
especially
good
from open play, especially from open play, Alan. They're dreadful.
Yeah. And now, listen, we know that, you know, from free set pieces, the lad Armstrong, he's excellent, actually. He's probably one of the most noteworthy players outside of the top two in terms of his contribution to that team. And his delivery is fantastic, and he's a goal threat. And we know that, you know, defensively, they're pretty strong. So, I mean, this game has got all the makings. You know, we were worried about, we said last week, we're more worried about St Johnstone than Hibs, because the St Johnstone game, Levine, you know, they were going to pack in if we didn't play well on a frosty pitch. There was a real sort of risk of a 0-0, actually. There was a real risk of getting beat, as it turned out. And this is very similar, right? This is very, very similar. In fact, more so, because Kilmarnock are more, have got far better defence than what St Johnstone have. And you know, add in the pitch aspects of it as well. And you're really looking at, this is going to be an absolute battle. So, I don't know. I wouldn't think that's the most horrible idea I've ever heard. It's another fiddling about, another compromise. Taylor was actually pretty decent. Say he had, I think he was suffering from a bit of flu as well himself. I think that's why he went off. He actually did pretty well, to say that he wasn't feeling too good. But you know, none of us think that Greg Taylor's the long term answer there. So yeah, listen. But then you would have to put another body into midfield. So you know, we're back to. Is Bernardo or Holm ready to step up and contribute to a 90-minute performance in a difficult away game? You know, Bernardo works out well in Europe because, again, it's what he does off the ball that stands out. But, you know, the onus will be on him to get into the box and create things. We've not seen that yet. So I think by sort of fiddling with one problem, we may create another, is my worry. To be honest with you, I just think the safest thing to do is to go with the same team that started against Hibs, because generally played pretty well. In fact, it got horrible when we brought the subs on. I mean, you know, Phillips and Ralston were just, you know, it just slowed the whole game down. It was just became really horrible. I mean, Scales been great, but he is, and I got the data on this now, he does move the ball slower than anyone else in the back line that we've had over the last two seasons. We're talking like fractions of a second here, but it is a thing. So it all became a bit stodgy in that second half, and so I wouldn't change it if we didn't have to.
Yeah. Nat Phillips with probably 10 minutes of the worst defending I've seen in a Celtic shirt over the last number of years when he came on, most notably the one that didn't end up in a goal, where he was being taken on and he falls over his own feet a couple of times and then they get a shot away. It just about doesn't end up in a goal. But I don't think Celtic will be making that a permanent move come January. But it's a nice little segue into the defensive issues, because we got some insight into why Liam Scales is starting ahead of our big money signings from the summer, and that is training. As was mentioned by Brendan Rodgers, saying that he loves the word personality. Personality can mean a thousand different things for Brendan Rodgers, but he said that it's always personality. There are clearly players ahead of them. What takes my attention in training, I'm out there every day watching training, and when I see players train and work with that personality, they will edge closer to my thinking. Unfortunately for Mike and Gustav, Scales has come into the team and has really taken his opportunity. Nat Phillips has been a great positive influence. It's an area of the team I don't want to change much. So, Jim, how bad in training do you think Navroski and Lagerbielka must be for Nat Phillips to be ahead of them in Brendan Rodgers' thinking right now, James?
To me, Lagerbielka is an easy answer, is that, usually when I do my benchmarking exercise, I specifically refrain from watching any video as a way of kind of, you know, highlighting what the potential value of doing the exercise is. But his profile was so weird. I was like, I got to look at this guy, because this just looks, it's, you know, he was seemingly a fairly good long ball player from the center back position on a team that didn't have the ball that much. And, you know, they're more of a long ball defensive team. But his short and intermediate passing data was pretty atrocious. But he also liked to take players on dribbling. Right. So, and he was pretty good at it. So that, you know, that's weird. And then his data for doing any kind of running with the ball was oddly low, almost like he never runs with the ball in possession, which is weird for a guy that dribbles a lot. So I had to look at him. And when I looked at him, I'm like, geez, this guy is slower than molasses.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This in February, which suited what his running related statistics suggested. And that was, to me, it was like, what? I can't even imagine how this guy made a list for Celtic. You know, having a guy who can't run play a high line as a center back, probably less than ideal. So again, it's not that he's a bad player. It's just fit relative to the system. Didn't make any sense to me. Navroski. So I suspect that might be part of the equation, which is, you know, God forbid we turn the ball over and have a slow center back. That's, and, you know, that's one of our primary vulnerabilities domestically, is in transition and, you know, having a center back that can't recover with pace. And that's, again, that's why Starfelt was generally very good domestically. That's why Scales, you know, he doesn't have elite speed, but he's got pretty good speed, and he's got that motor, that engine at the center back position. Navroski is the more interesting one. His profile was one of, if an actual, the most likely area that I saw where he would struggle is the physicality. He looked like he may not be the most kind of on ball man versus man defensive presence. And I suspect that might be the issue that he might be needing to work on, meaning that even if you're working as hard as you can, if you're being physically overpowered as a defender in Scotland for Celtic domestically, that can be a problem, particularly in a game like we're expecting on Sunday. So that's my guess on both of them. Again, I don't know. It's just that's based off of the profiling that I did before we signed them. And, you know, again, this is where you get back to this. Why was Awada not playing? It's if you're going to compensate and say, okay, we're going with Scales as the center back because of these other issues. This is this, you know, least bad optimization challenge that Rodgers has been dealing with, I suspect, is, you know, Hart's who he is. You're having to compromise and put Scales in at center back. What Alan was just saying, as far as relative to the speed of buildup with him at center back is, you know, glacial, shall we say. That's the purpose that McGregor was playing. And if you look at his data when he was playing in that position, he's dropping deeper than he has usually. And he's, so that's been his functionary role, which is vitally important, but also horribly boring and in no way sexy, but also important. So, you know, I think that's been the compromising that he's been making. And it'll be interesting, as we've been saying, plopping Awada in that role, he's not going to serve the same functionality as McGregor. So does that mean McGregor has to drop deep anyway? And now we've got two midfielders to compensate for this issue at center back. So it'll be interesting. But that's, I suspect those are the big issues with those two players in particular.
What do you think, Alan?
I think it's beyond exasperating that Nat Phillips is performing better in training than Navroski and Lagerbielka based on his performance the other night. I just, it's just exasperating. Because, yeah, Phillips, somebody in a WhatsApp group, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, it wasn't ours, said that he thought Phillips was Liverpool's Tony Ralston. Like, a great guy, probably brilliant to have around the place, probably brilliant in training, always try his heart out, but there's just fundamental limitations there that will never change around, you know, mainly around sort of awkwardness and speed of play. And he looks very much like that to me. He looks like a player who needs a lot of games to get up to match fitness. And yeah, he's good in the air. Definitely his headed duels stats, brilliant. He's like a slightly safer version of Shane Duffy, what I can see. Just really not a lot of mobility there. And I mean, it was embarrassing, actually, the way he got turned inside out by Yuan. I mean, Yuan's a good player. I thought he had a good game, actually, the other night. Based on what Hibs fans say, he seems to pick and choose when he's on. Hence why he's been on the bench recently. But anyway, he turned him inside out twice, could have scored two goals, score one. And he looked what he did, like you say, and just looked awful, cumbersome, slow, uncoordinated. And if he's, as I say, if he's performing better than the other options, I'm pulling what little hair I have left out at this point. I mean, crikey, is Steve Welsh fit yet? I mean, where are we? It's just yet another problem I didn't think we would be having. And well, we shouldn't be fucking having. It's just another one to add to the list.
Yeah, like on top of the winger situation, where Celtic are actually short on wingers, and they're short on strikers, and they're short on left-back options. Like centre-back is not the position. The position where we have the most amount of players there and available is not the position I thought we would be having the most amount of discussion about throughout the year. And look, if you're not doing it in training, you don't deserve to start. That's as simple as. So I'm fully behind Brendan Rodgers in this. If you're not training to the extent where you're going to be fit enough and sharp enough to do it on the pitch, then, and I'm sorry, you're just going to be on the bench, and that's your own problem. You need to work harder. Nat Phillips, I feel slightly sorry for him, because, I mean, how do you get up to speed with the highest level in Scotland and the highest expectation and a different style of play if you haven't played more than, like, you know, 8 games in a row over the last 4 seasons for the club that you currently are on loan from? It's, you know, it is quite a difficult task. But, I mean, he certainly hasn't stamped his place in the team to the point where he can actually get that run of games. So, again, you're looking back to scales. And look, I know I'm the scales PR man and all that, but I'd rather, like, marginally slower play from the build-up and the quality that he's bringing in that, because I think that needs to be brought into that, is that Scales is a really, really good passer of the ball. Like, he's incredibly, firstly, when he plays a safe pass, he's safe for those passes, but then he is good at breaking the line as well with his longer passing as well. So, I mean, he still deserves to start in my eyes. I think there are certain echelons of the Celtic fans that are waiting for Scales to make a massive blunder so they can go, ah, see, I told you, he's not good enough for Celtic. He'll never be good enough for Celtic, and he'll be dropped, and they'll be proven right after all. But yeah, if the challenge is not there from the other ones, then he's the man that's going to be starting on the team. And I think that's what Brendan Rodgers is essentially saying here. Just before we move on from the quality issue, the January transfer market is going to be opening now shortly. Celtic are going to be looking to bring some players in. Vioski from Aberdeen is being linked with a 4.5 million move. Not sure I can get behind that one fully just yet, but I did a thread last week about Celtic's transfers where I went through the quality, the success rate that Celtic had. It is slightly subjective. I know, Alan, you would have changed one or two things that I did, but essentially I came to the conclusion that Celtic over the last 10 years have had a success rate of around 32% with their transfers. I don't think I'm too far off, am I?
I'll let James take the bulk of this, because I think it's something that he's probably spent a lot longer on than I have in terms of doing deeper dives. But I've done something similar along the lines. I track all these things. You're probably not surprised to know. Yeah, and I think 32% sounds low. I think James, we'll say something along the lines that, you know, about 50% hit rate is probably where you should be aiming for. And listen, we know that. We've had issues over the years, let's call it, in terms of how the recruitment and operation has been ran. You know, long story short, we had a meddling CEO, and we probably overused certain agents, and it was all a bit too kind of parochial and chummy in that regard. I'd like to think we've moved to a more modern structure, but as we've said many times this year, I'm not convinced we've got the right talent actually in the key roles, and therefore we're making bad decisions. And the clear evidence for that is the work that, again, I'll let James speak for himself in a second, is the work James did on benchmarking the two lads from Korea and also Lagerbielka. None of those signings made any sense. Lagerbielka, I think, is probably a good footballer, but he's in the wrong team for his style of play. The two Korean lads are just miles short of the quality that Celtic need to be recruiting. So, but I'll say, I think this is something probably, James, you might want to pick up on.
Yeah, I just don't think. I think as Alan describes it, there's not been a level of sophistication in the player trading model. It's been, you know, we're still doing it as if it's the 80s and 90s, I think, for the most part, and we've been, I think, trying, it seems, in the last few years to advance the ball a little bit. But it's been varying degrees of poor relative to this, you know, these two worlds that we're kind of crossing over from and into. I think the other part of this is not only Lagerbickel's a good example of this, as was Ajeti, as was Duffy. It's not that these players are bad players, or that they have no talent or that they have no usefulness. It's a question of role optimization, and you know what the team actually needs and having some coherence. And that's one of the things I said with when Ange came in, is that I thought the quality of talent identification didn't improve dramatically, but at least we got more coherent. And that prior to that, we had been so incoherent. That's what made this past summer so frustrating, is that I think we got the worst of both of those. Is we got a fair amount of incoherence mixed with quality that just wasn't there either. And some of that, this also comes down to, bureaucracy and friction. So when you have turnover at the manager position and you have a manager as God model, where you're not going to have uniformity in style of play, and you're going to have managers have a material impact on the type of the profile of player that you want to be recruiting. By definition, every turnover, you're going to have friction. And that friction, if you have a recruitment process that requires a pipeline of review and in-person scouting and doing various things of, and I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing, but if it's bureaucratic and takes months on end in order to establish certain things that meet your requirements to sign a player, by definition, every time you get a new manager, it's going to be a mess, because you're not going to have the bureaucracy fulfilled to meet the requirements of the new manager. And that's, you saw that even with Ange's, when Ange came in, the amount of players that were signed that made, no sense in that first window, Shaw, Irigidi, Hart, James McCarthy. I mean, just, varying degrees of wacky. And, but even if you go back, Shane Duffy, Ajeti. Ajeti was recruited to be, the second striker in a 3-5-2 system. And then we stopped playing it almost immediately after he was signed. And then, people moan that, and fair enough, that, he didn't play well. Well, of course not. He's not a single striker system striker. Like he's a poacher in the box, within 12 yards. That's what he thrives at. Put Jack Amakis in that Neil Lennon side and see how well he would have played. It probably would have been a train wreck as well. It's all about, this kind of fit and optimizing. This goes above and beyond the actual player trading aspect of this, which has been poor as well. And if you benchmark it, it's been, really poor. Things like not selling, in Cham when he's at his peak value, and, the selling decision has been really poor as well. So it's almost at each stage of the process here, we've been coming up short. And, that's where, again, based off of Roger's comments, he seems to be acutely aware of the issue now. So how that gets resolved, I think, will be the most interesting part for the coming window. And then probably more importantly, next summer. Now, I'm not I'm not an ideologue in this sense, meaning that I'd be content with a couple of loans that were of a quality coming in, ideally if they have an option to buy, that kind of thing. But it is really hard to get, particularly with the limitations that we seem to have with the decision makers, the idea that we're going to have some brilliant January window of getting 8 guys out, placing them well, putting them in loan positions or, sales that make sense for their career and for Celtic, and then also bring in 3 or 4 players of, this aspirational quality. I just don't think that on a permanent basis. I just think that's highly unlikely. So if we get 1 or 2 high level loan players, and get a lot of people out, then I would consider that January a success.
Mm. I wasn't trying to see if Celtic were good or bad at transfers when I was doing that. It was more seeing the price range of players to see where Celtic have actually had the success. And surprise, surprise, any player that Celtic spent more than $7 million on was a success and one of the standout players. And surprise, surprise, any player that Celtic paid more or less than $1 million for didn't make any sort of impact at all. They had two major wins in that. One of them was Frimpong, and I can't remember who the second one was. I think it might Lee Griffiths, that's exactly. Those two players were the two wins that Celtic had for that price range. Other than that, it's a waste of time bringing in players for that amount of money to the top club in Scotland. It's just has a real high failure rate. So, yeah, you can go check that out on Twitter if you want to go and have a look at some of Celtic's moves over the last 10 years or so in the transfer market. Just before we finish up then, the name that I mentioned there, Miovoski, I'm sorry if I'm butchering that. Miovoski. I mean, look, at the price range, Alan, I'm just saying no. I mean, like, if you're going to spend $5 million, which is probably going to be if Aberdeen are looking for 4.5, you're probably going to spend $5 million, including his wages and whatever add-ons and bonuses and et cetera that you end up paying agent fees. I mean, should Celtic not be looking for some higher quality there for that amount of money? He's a good player. I've been really, you know, impressed with him for Aberdeen. He looks like a dangerous player, but he doesn't improve what Celtic have in the physicality aspect up front. He's not more clinical than Kyogo is up front, and his movement isn't better than Kyogo or Ove. So I'm just like, why are we spending $5 million on this guy?
So the Lee Griffiths segue was inadvertent, actually, but it was going to work really well because, you know, what other categories does Lee Griffiths fit into in terms of this conversation? He was the last striker that Celtic bought that you would say had SPFL experience. I mean, I know with Celtic and Wolves, but obviously played in Scotland before, you know, for a long time before that. So as the last striker Celtic signed that actually played in the league and knew the league, and then obviously he did very well. Ended bad, but for the most part, you would say he was a success. Does that matter? Probably not. But I think I've looked at this with intrigue. It might be because of the enormous frustrations I'm feeling about so many other parts of the team. I'm choosing to be looking at this one more kind of optimistically. But I think it's an intriguing one if you look at the positives. I think here's a guy who, for a start, he's a good age, right? He's 24. He's clearly done very well for Aberdeen in a team that is really poor and doesn't play in a way that gets the best out of him. And yet he's still put up decent numbers despite that. He scored in Europe for them. He scored, you know, he's got a good record in the Conference or the Europa League, whatever they've been playing in the last couple of years. He's played as a single striker. He's played in a pair. He did well in Hungary. He's now done well in Scotland. So the guy has got that adaptability about him. He's got 17 caps. He's only 24 years old. So he's got a good level of international experience as well. So I think it's an intriguing one. I wouldn't write it off, to be honest, at this stage. I think, to your point, I think the price point is very high, but I suspect he wouldn't be on massive wages. Like, if he came on, I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, around the sort of low teens or, you know, grand a week type of thing. I can't imagine he's on more than 5 or 6 grand a week at Aberdeen. I just don't think they would pay more than that. So he probably wouldn't be expensive in the long term as far as our old friend amortization is concerned, even if the transfer fee is a little bit clunky. So yeah, I'm intrigued by this one. I think there's some, I take your point about maybe some, I'm not as familiar with his style of play. You mentioned a few things there that I can't argue with because I don't have the information. But as I say, those were the things I think that I chose to have about that particular possibility.
Yeah, I mean, like, if he's coming in as a second or third choice, I think it's totally a fine option. Like, you know, he is a good player from what I've seen of him, and I'm sure he would actually come in and score, you know, 10, 11 goals maybe if he was getting regular game time for Celtic. You know, I don't think that's an unreasonable thing. It's not something you'd certainly turn your nose up at this point in time, James. But what I'm looking at this is, okay, Brendan Rodgers wants quality. He wants to bring in quality players that are going to make an impact on the team and progress the team in Europe. This to me looks like the easy option. Oh, this guy's available. He plays in the league that we play in. We could afford him, and let's bring him in to quiet down Rodgers for a couple of months, because if we spend $5 million on a striker, I mean, we're paying $5 million on a striker.
It's such a young age. You're so cynical. This is incredible. so sad.
Am I wrong?
You've been hanging out with those old men too long. So I think the first elephant in the room, I think, is Kyogo may not be a good fit for Brendan Rodgers' system. and we haven't really talked about that too much. And that's not to say that he's not a terrific player. He's not, you know, of a quality or standard that makes sense at Celtic. I think we all love him, all love watching him play. But I think if Brendan Rodgers had a clean slate to allocate resources, the profile of Kyogo would not be the type of striker that he would select. And I wonder, given his age, whether or not next summer might not be a time that we look to move him on. And if you think about it within that context, I think Miofsky makes a lot of sense. I agree with Alan. I think Griffiths is a nice kind of analog for him. He's probably right on that edge as far as whether or not he could be a material contributor at the Europa League level, kind of like what we, I think, envision of Celtic being, that kind of late stage Europa League as the base case. I think he can be. I think his athleticism is enough. He's not a barn burner. He's not like a really pacey striker. But the thing that stood out to me when I've looked at him is he seems to tick off. I have a basket of metrics that I look at that are kind of proxies for player IQ. And I don't mean that in an academic sense, but in like being a smart footballer, spatial intelligence and that kind of thing. And he ticks all of them off. So he strikes me as a very smart player and a creative striker, even within that context. And so I think he would scale very well into Celtic, meaning that the volume of opportunities that he would get and his ability to navigate around the box at Celtic, I think, would be potentially very positive. But he's not the kind of physical stud that I think, you know, a Brendan Rodgers is likely to want as, you know, one. So he would be kind of 1A. I think O kind of does, you know, move in that direction. So I could see Miofsky coming in January, and then, you know, that also helps with maybe the issue of Kyogo being gone for the Asian Cup, Maeda as well, potentially. And then next summer, maybe Kyogo moves on and then we bring in, you know, the young stud, that would be more kind of prototypical Rodgers. And then you've got a nice, like, that to me is a great mix of three strikers. And also allows for a lot of flexibility as far as system, because that's the other issue I mentioned earlier. You know, one of the issues is Rodgers hasn't been as exploratory on the system side, and part of that, reasonably so. Who's the sub to come on at the striker position if you start both of them at the beginning of the game, or if one of them gets hurt? You know, that kind of thing. So I actually like the idea of Miofsky. The price, I think, the going rate for a good striker. and I do think that there's this, you know, there's this bias against not only Scottish players, but, you know, players in the league, understandably at times. But, you know, there's been a lot of good players, both Scottish domestically and then others that have kind of passed through and we miss. And I would actually be okay with Miofsky, even at that price.
Yeah. Listen, we spent the same amount on Ajeti, so it can't be more of a waste of money than he. So, listen, if it happens, it happens. I'm not going to turn my nose up at another option as a striker, but personally, I think it's a little too easy. It's a little too convenient that there happens to be a striker nearby that Celtic will be looking to bring forward. But, I mean, they are going to need a striker should the Asian Cup roll around and we lose 2 to 3 of our forward players to that. So, Real quick,
the flip side of this is, I mean, Aberdeen are in a relegation battle at this point. I mean, it's early. It's incredible given the quality of players that they have. You know, we've talked about this since the summer and how odd they've been since Robson arrived as the manager. And so it'll be interesting whether or not they would take that, you know, risk of selling one of their best players, even for that money, when they probably could get something similar in the summer, I would guess. Given that, I mean, it's probably still a low probability. It's not, but it's not like, you know, it's more like Donald Trump getting elected in 2016, low of probability, which it's still uncomfortably high, even though it's probably not going to happen. So that comes back to whether or not we'd have to overpay. That comes back to why, you know, January is a rough window. I don't want to overpay for Miowski, particularly if it's likely that we could get him in the summer. And I could see a situation where Aberdeen's not all that willing of a seller.
Yeah, that's
remember Endo, that Miowski was way more of a standout in Aberdeen an Aberdeen side last season than Scales was, and Scales is now and the starter for Celtic. So, I know we're running out of time, but I just add a bit of frisson to this. I kind of disagree about Kyogo. I would say there's a lot of stylistic similarities between Kyogo and, for example, Jamie Vardy, to be honest with you. And Jamie Vardy was Leicester's striker mainly under Rodgers. So I think the problem we've got with Kyogo is just the absolute sheer lack of service he's getting. That's really the issue. I mean, my goodness, doesn't he look frustrated? He's turned into angry Kyogo. He was barging into the St. Johnstone keeper, fouling people against Hibs. He looks like he's turned into a little angry Kyogo. Like, he's clearly very frustrated, but the serious point is he's getting no service. And I think if he was given, and listen, this was always likely to happen at some point because he touches the ball so few times. If things aren't going for him, it's very noticeable. It's not like he's, you know, like Jota, where he puts one over the bar and then 2 minutes later he's got the ball again and he'll go again and he'll go again. And you know, Kyogo's not like that. He'll literally be on the ball 15 times in the game, right? That's it. And if things aren't happening for him, then he's not going to score. So I'd kind of disagree a little bit on that one. I think it's down to service.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Alan, because if you think of Rodgers, not at Celtic where he was obsessive with possession in the beginning, his Leicester side at their best, they had Castagne and whoever, I can't remember who the right back was at the time, as like really powerful runners with the ball. Same with Harvey Barnes, and then a couple of more wingers. He had runners from midfield. Like Rodgers at Leicester, when they finished just outside of the top four twice in a row, where they were in the top four for the entire year, then dropped out, they had strong runners and they were quite direct. They weren't a possession dominating team at all. They just got the ball forward really quickly to their strong, powerful runners and then into the box to their strikers. And Celtic are not doing that at the minute from the wings. Johnson's starting to do it a little bit more from right back, Alan. Sorry, I know you did a little bit on him. We might touch on him again and on the defensive issues at some point, but he seems to be coming back to what he was last season in his ball distribution and his crossing and things like that. So we'll touch on that on another show. But I think that's where we will leave the show for this week. We'll be back again next week with a review of the Kilmarnock game. And there's also Champions League next week as well, isn't there? Or is that 2 weeks' time?
I think it's next week. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Feyenoord next Wednesday. So whether or not we'll have a show before that or after that, we'll let you know on Twitter. But until then, we will chat to you again next week. Chat to you later. Good luck.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.